Ladies and gentlemen, what's happening? Welcome to Plum Love Foods Live right here on Spreaker Radio. First time ever doing it on here. We're going to see how it goes. Got a great guest tonight. Panini Pete is going to join us. Should be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. Hope you guys are going to enjoy it too. Please bear with us. This new software is going to be a little tricky for me, so I'm going to give it a go. Hope you guys enjoy the show. So if you do, do me a favor. Please rate, review, and subscribe. If you subscribe to the old feed on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, it's since changed, and it's going to get fixed, but Apple's a pain in the ass, so it's a bit of a problem. So sit right there and get ready. Let's play some dramatic music. Game on, baby. Yeah, that's right, y'all. Brand new intro, brand new software. Jeez, just brand new everything it seems like we've got here, right? Looking forward to it, man, getting used to this software. So, hey, one of the things tonight you're going to know is that usually on the old software, our guests would call in. It was all done through the phone. This is not done through the phone. It's done through a fancy schmancy thing called Dim Internets, right? Now, I run through the internet here. It's a little bit different. Supposed to be better software, better everything all around. So I'm getting used to it. It's called Spreaker. I'm kind of digging it so far. I have fun things like this. Like I have soundboards.
Boring.
Yeah, I know. It's boring. You don't want to hear my stories. I got it. But it's pretty cool to hear it, man. So I'm excited to be here on Spreaker, giving this a try this time. I'm starting to figure it out. We did our show live from Boston last week, and I was still a little lost on what I was doing. And turns out I didn't actually share it. And it's just, you know, it's just a bunch of nonsense, but I got it figured out, I think. And the fun part's going to be when Pete calls in to make sure I've actually got it figured out. So enough of the reason why I'm saying this, the whole reason why I'm saying this is because I'm giving the precursor in case it sounds weird or you got to bear with me while I learn it. And I'm going to learn it, and it's going to be dope when it's done. But same thing we had when we first started the Blog Talk series. It took a little time, but, you know, 150 episodes in here, and we're doing good, man. It was time to switch software. It was time to move on. So here we are, and we're kicking it. We're doing our thing. So I hope you guys are having a great Monday. I hope your Monday's off to a great start. Mine is not bad at all. I honestly worked in the city today. The worst part was getting in town, but getting out was no problem. So it hasn't been that bad of a day. I don't have anything to complain about. One fun thing to talk about, though, is tomorrow night, if you guys don't already have the Station Head app on your phone, you got to get this app. I'm telling you, it's such a cool app. It really is. You build your own radio station. You can go live whenever you want. You set your own playlists up. You can play whatever you want. There's tons of other people on there. And your boy is going to be on there, too, because tomorrow night, we are going to be live for the first ever Brooklyn Live episode with myself and my co-host Serena. We've got Chef Michelle Ragusas coming in. We've got a performance from our man Silvestri, which is going to be awesome. And then we might play a little Pie Face. So it's going to be a fun show, man. I'm looking forward to it. You guys, if you're in town, if you're not working, which is crazy, but I'm pretty sure you probably are. But if you're not, dude, come by and see us. Or send me a message and let us know, because we'd love to see you. And we have a few tickets for but we have some spots, basically. We have some spots on the to come watch the show and hang out with us. So give it a go. I don't know. It's going to be fun. I'm excited about it. So, you know, it's a little bit different, too. It's going to be we have a studio now in Station Head, so it should be pretty fun. So tomorrow night, Brooklyn Live is happening in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. If you're around, come by and check the show out, man. So it should be a lot of fun because, I don't know, it's going to be live music, a funny game. There you go, funny games. And do we like games? We like games. Do we like chefs? We like chefs. Do we like musicians? These are all great things. Do we like Chef Plum? Well, I guess we don't like me. I try. What about Do we like Serena?
Boring.
Oof, maybe not. No, I'm kidding. They do like her. They like her very much. Yeah, it was funny. I know it was funny. Hey, I have a soundboard now. Can you hear that? Here's the problem. I haven't quite figured out how I can have my guest hear the soundboard. That's the issue. I want him to be able to hear what I'm doing so he can hear me being silly and making jokes and everything, but I don't think he can. yeah, Dimitri, I'm working on it, man. I'm learning, but the soundboard's cool. I'm working on it. We're learning it. We're learning it. So anyway, and the fun part is that all the episodes now are going to go to YouTube, and they go all over the place. So it's a much better scenario in the long run once we get it figured out. But tomorrow, Brooklyn Live is happening. Come by and check it out if you can. It's going to be a lot of fun. Also, man, it's getting to be about that time in the summer where we're having all the summertime foods, and I'm going to be out in Montauk, so I can get back to actually posting food pictures, which should be a lot of fun. So I haven't had a chance to post a lot of food pictures because a lot of things I do now are more a little more. I just got two text messages from people that could hear me, which is very funny. Two of them, as a matter of fact, simultaneously. It's very funny. But I haven't had a chance to post a lot of food pictures on the Instagram because I've been, you know, a lot of stuff I do is kind of family style, so it's a lot of people. But more of those pictures are coming, which is going to be a lot of fun. So who sucks? I'm getting told someone sucks. But the other thing I want to address, and you can see that's me buying time because I wasn't sure if everything's working, but I'm sure it is now. You can hear me. But I want to address, I made an Instagram story post yesterday that, boy, did it start a little bit of a shitstorm. People weren't happy with me. In my post, I had said something to the effect of, you know, people who have these $100 aprons and $400 knives, but they don't know how to, you know, do certain simple techniques in the kitchen but want to be called chef and pull their cameras out and take pictures. I created a bit of a shitstorm. That's probably up there with one of the most viewed Instagram stories I've ever had. It was a shit ton of people. But I hold steadfast to it, man. I'm holding steadfast to it for sure because I think, wait, what's he talking about? I don't know. Somebody's seen me. Why? This is the worst time you could ever text me messages like that. Honestly, it's one of those things where I hold firmly to it, man. I hold firmly to it. I just don't think that a $100 apron and a $400 knife makes you a chef. I just don't believe in that. I don't think it's a good thing. I don't think it's a good thing at all. Honestly, like, how about you start from the bottom and work your way up, you know? I mean, just because you have a great knife, you have a great apron with a name brand on it. First of all, I don't know any cooks that can afford a $100 apron. And if you can, I don't know where you're getting money from. Because when I was just cooking a restaurant, I couldn't afford a $100 apron. Not at all. All I could afford was, you know, whatever was there. We used to get the aprons free from Cisco. And I have a bunch of those. I think I still have some of those. They're kind of gross. Probably even haven't been washed yet. And knives. Hell, I didn't get my first knives. So I was in culinary school. Like, I didn't have any knives that were my own. It's ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, you have to, it's almost like you're not willing to learn. It's like you're not willing, your mind's not open enough. It's the new guy syndrome that we're seeing all over Instagram these days. Like, at my old job, here's what I did. Well, guess what? This isn't your old job, and I don't really give a shit. You know, that's how it goes. And same thing, when you come into a new restaurant or you come into work with a new caterer or something like that, just keep your mouth shut, man. Just keep your mouth shut. That's all it is to it. You don't have to come in here and flash off your shiny new knives and look at my brand new expensive kitchen shoes and, oh, I have some shiny pants and whatever. Here's my brand new smoke pants. That's my new invention, by the way. Brand new smoke pants in the kitchen and my $400 knives and my $100 apron and, oh, wait, you want me to do what? What's a brunoise? I've never cut a brunoise before. At my last job at Applebee's, we didn't do that. Yeah. It's just stupid. Put the goddamn camera down, right? Take pictures when it's appropriate. Pictures not during service. It drives me apeshit batty. I don't know. I'm off my high horse now, and apparently everything seems to be working here on the platform. So I'm going to get our guest on the horn tonight, right now. I'm going to play you a quick tune while I do that, and we'll be right back with Panini Pete. But in the meantime, guys, if you haven't done so yet, remember the new feed. If you go to Apple iTunes or Apple Podcasts, type in Chef Plum or Plum Love Foods. It comes up twice. Look for the one with the season 6. It's all going to be merged together very, very soon. But Apple, apparently, I've stumped them with a question because they can't figure out how to fix it. So I don't know. Anyway, rate, review, and subscribe. Please, if you haven't done so already, get in there and give them some because we'd appreciate it. My name is Chef Plum. Stay right there. This is This is Start of Fire by my friend Ryan Starr. Be right back, guys. Hang tight with Panini Pete, the man.
I remember when you said your father's asleep.
were swimming as our clothes drifted off to sea. So wake up, dreaming, and lie here with me. Wake up, dreaming, and lie here with me. Here we go, just lose control and let your body give in to the beat of your heart as my hand touches your skin. Is this love?
Go Start a Fire by my buddy Ryan Starr. Going to see him tomorrow at Brooklyn Live, the first episode. You guys, if you're not around, you make sure you got to come check that out. Send us a message. Let us know. It's going to be a lot of fun. Like I said, I'm learning this new software thing, and I knew the one guy I could have on here with me that would definitely not judge me for sure on learning a new software is Panini Pete. And I'll tell you what, I was doing some research on this gentleman. And I haven't turned his mic on yet, but I will in a second. Hey, I do have him, which is a good thing. So far, so good with the new software. But he's one of those guys that after your research, you kind of just want to go hang out with, man. There's not very many inspirational people left in the world. But when you hear the story of this gentleman and the things that he does and how much good he puts out there in the world, if I could sound a little bit hippie-ish, then you just want to hang out with him because he sounds amazing. And I'm so excited to have him on here. The iconic, the one, the only, Mr. Panini Pete. Pete, what's up, brother?
What's going on, Chef Plum? How you doing, brother?
I am good, man. I'm sitting here trying my hardest to not feel as old as I am while using the software. That's what I'm doing.
Well, I'll tell you what, having me on is definitely going to make you feel young. When you bring out the dinosaurs, it's going to always help, man. Thanks for having me here, and the audio sounds great, man.
Awesome, man. I tell you, it's the first time I've used this particular software, so I'm hoping it works out well.
I think it's killing it because even when I was on break back here, I could hear your heavy breathing and panting and just all kinds of weird sounds. And I was like, man, this is working great. I know you better than you want me to.
No, you don't want to know what I was doing. That's the bad part. I was, I got some duct tape out and some plastic wrap. It's not good.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. I knew I shouldn't have gone there this early in the podcast.
Hell, I'm not even one beer in yet and you're already getting there. Pete, it's funny, man, because you and I, you know, we have some mutual friends, and we've been friends on social media, but you and I have actually never spoken in person, or at least on the phone, until this afternoon, right?
Yeah, first time. So, you know, again, you know, we've got people that have been talking each other up, and, you know, I've heard about you from Michael and Scott over at Ergo Chef, and yeah, they're saying, you guys got to get together, man. He's really cool. He's like you.
Oh, well, they said the same thing about you. I talked to Mikey on the way home today. I was like, yeah, I'm going to have Pete on tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. And he was like, oh, you're going to love him, man. You guys are cut from the same cloth. You're the same kind of guy. And, you know, after talking to you on the phone just for, you know, 15, 20 minutes earlier this afternoon, I was like, God, that guy. It really is. Everything I've heard is the truth, man, from all the good stuff you do. And I want to get into all that stuff. But before we do, how many restaurants do you have now? Is it six or is it 64? I can't figure it out.
Yeah, no, it's six. You know, four currently that I run down here in this area in Alabama. And then I have two licensed Panini Pizza up in West Virginia in Morgantown on the WBU campus. So six total. But the two up there, I only hit those two or three times a year.
Right. So they're happy that the boss never comes around.
Yeah, they are. We actually just had a couple of the managers down here last week doing a little intensive training and you know, a little boot camp for them up there, if you will.
You know, the thing is, though, it's like you're not some guy who just got into the restaurant business, you know, just, I'm going to open a restaurant. I mean, that's kind of all you've done your whole life, right? Like, you worked your way up in the business. You started off in the dish pit.
Yeah, I mean, literally, you know, I've been doing it for 40 years. And, you know, started off, my first gig was actually at a Pizza Hut, you know, about a bazillion years ago. One of the neighborhood kids worked there, and he was a few years older than us. He was kind of Maurice Ziccarelli. He was the Italian, the Goomba that worked there. So at any given time, we all worked at that place. If they got short, somebody didn't call, you know, didn't show, he called the next kid on the list. And I finally made it and got my shot. And I loved the business, so I just never got out of it.
It's kind of infectious, right, once you get into it? Because, I mean, did you know, is it something you always wanted to do? Or is it just, you know, I always talk about in this show that people who are in our kind of generation of cooks and chefs are, we're a broken band of pirates. We're, you know, none of us really asked to be. It just kind of happened. Like, I didn't want to be in the restaurant business. I was a theater major in college. Like, I don't even, that means I worked in restaurants. Doesn't, you know, I don't know. It just kind of happened.
Yeah, we just ended up there. It wasn't, you know, without the exposure in this area or this era of the quote unquote celebrity chef, I mean, we weren't looking towards that. You know, in restaurants for me as a kid, we didn't go out and eat a lot in restaurants.
Yeah.
And so it was just something that I did for money. It paid a good wage. Mm-hmm. It's hard work. There was always cute waitresses around. And I love the social aspect. I love the, you know, messing around with food. And it just got in my blood, man, really, really early.
And once it gets there, man, it's hard to get rid of it. I'm with you, man. Once you've kind of just been doing it for so long, you know, I make the joke all the time. I don't really know what else to do. I can make dick jokes. I can cook food. That's the two things I can do. That's it.
Yeah. And it's like, hey, just rock it. Why do anything else? You're already a double threat, man.
That's it, man. So Panini Pete's, like the first restaurant, that was your very first one that was yours, right? But what led to that point? Was it, I mean, did you ever work in like hotels or doing things like that? Did you work in like a high-end sandwich shop? And how did it go from, you know, just from the early beginnings to Panini Pete's?
Yeah, so running the gambit, you know, I got in the business and that was fun, the Pizza Hut thing. But, you know, right from there, I kind of moved into the next level of, you know, full service. And I moved down to the dish pit at a steakhouse down in Fort Lauderdale. I grew up down there. I was born in Chicago, but I grew up in Fort Lauderdale, and restaurant business was great down there. So I worked in a dish pit there at a steakhouse, and, you know, moved my way up to do a little prep, and then it just kept going from there. And I worked as a runner and a short order cook at a little place called the 15th Street Fisheries. Nice. In Fort Lauderdale. Still there, iconic spot.
Wow.
And there was this gentleman, Mike Hurst, was the owner operator there. Awesome guy. He taught hospitality management at FIU. He was president of the National Restaurant Association in like the early or late 90s or something. So he was an icon and giant in the industry. I didn't know that. I mean, I had been in it for two or three years. I thought I knew more than he did at one point. I used to question the forecast. But, you know, he's the first guy to talk to me about making a career of it. And my dad kind of pushed me over the edge. I was getting out of high school and maybe even going into the service. You know, I played sports and then I got into the restaurant business and loved it, but I never thought of it as a career. And my dad met a guy that taught hospitality management down at Broward Community College. He said, you know, you ought to think about that as a career. And you seem to really like it. I was like, dude, that just makes so much sense. My dad hadn't been that smart in a decade at least. And I was like, I'm checking into this. And that kind of started it. So, And Mike Hurst talked to me a lot about going to the CIA, which I know your fellow alumni, baby, green
yes,
and
sir.
Gold.
Yes, sir.
How about it? And, you know, I went up there for a visit and said, this is it. This is what I'm going to do, man. I'm going to make a career out of it. And, you know, since, you know, I worked in some bars and some different things, saving up some money to go up to the CIA. And then it was just wide open from there. I mean, I worked on a cruise ship right out of school. You know, I did my extern at the Boca Hotel and Club down there. So big properties, little properties. I was the exec at the University of Alabama, Roll Tide.
Look at you, man.
Some high-volume places, little-volume places. And my first kind of close stint, I'd been living in Alabama for 2 years. My one of my sisters is married to a guy named Bob Baumhauer, who was a big Alabama alumni and a Miami Dolphin. He was a big football player.
It's a mouthful of a name.
Yeah, Bob Baumhauer, you know. He's a mouthful of a man. Big dude, right?
Sounds like it, yeah.
All pro, beast, one of the killer bees. Well, he retires and decides he's going to get in the restaurant business full time. He had kind of dabbled, you know, had his name on some places. So
right.
He talked me into moving up to Alabama, and it was massive culture shock at first. But I really fell in love with it up here. And we worked together for a few years, and I ended up going back to Florida to work with a buddy of mine named Brent LaHaye. And he was opening a place called Noodles Panini. And a little upscale pasticceria Panina Teca down in Las Olas, which is a great, you know, area of Fort Lauderdale. And we just went down there and rocked it. And I was kind of the pseudo, you know, supposedly working partner, sweat equity guy. It didn't pan out. But you know, I really fell in love with Italian food even more down there, and the simplicity and the great ingredients. And so anyway, that ultimately it led me to I started getting that itch, you know, to do my own thing. And at one point, God, I was probably, you know, shit, I was late 30s, early 40s, and I said, I got to do something, man, or shut up, because I know my buddies are getting tired of hearing me talk about opening my own place, because I'm freaking getting tired of hearing me talk about opening my own place. So I came into this windfall of cash, all right, this windfall. Sit down. Are you ready?
What? All right, let's do it.
I borrowed like 20 grand from my mom, you know, had this little, and I had found this little, my wife found this spot in the French Quarter of Fairhope, and it was a cool little outdoor cafe with a fountain and a tree, but it was closed down, one of those typical been 5-6 different restaurants and closed more than open, but it was fully equipped. And Bessie Montgomery, the landlord, was convinced that I was going to do great there and I should be part of the family. She had no idea if I could fucking cook or anything. Just like, yeah, she was ready for a rent check.
That's it, right?
Yeah, man. And you know, when I went in there, I'll tell you, it was crazy and it was scary, and it was a cool little spot. You know, it was well equipped, and you know, I had to work out a deal with the equipment guy that owned it. And so, dude, I'll rent the equipment for 6 months for $500, and you know, if I'm still here, then I'll buy it, and you know, I'll give you $1,000 a month for 12 months, and then a balloon payment. I mean, it was a lot of smoke and mirrors, dude.
Of course.
But I just felt like if I gave myself at least a year, you know, to go completely flat ass broke, I might have a shot, you know, because I knew I could cook and I knew the business. I knew hospitality. And, you know, this little place just turned into a great spot. And, you know, Fairhope was a great lunch town. I said, hell, if I could pull off just doing lunch, dude, that's a dream come true, you know, for a restaurant guy, for a chef. And I looked around, studied the market, and I said, man, let me do, you know, chef driven European style paninis. You know, I'd been dabbling with it a little bit in Florida a few years prior. And just came out of the gate and just crushed it. House roasted meats, homemade mozzarella, fresh cut fries and chips. And just, you know, I don't want to say crushed it, because it was a very slow start. You know, we're off the beaten path. But it worked out, man. And you know, calling it Panini Pete's wasn't my first idea. And again, that was, I got to give my wife credit for that. And then it kind of wasn't even just a restaurant name. Now it's kind of like a, you know, it's a brand, man.
Right.
It's,
oh, for sure. It's you. I love it so much,
and just really, really love the business. It's never failed me yet, you know.
You know, I think the thing that's funny about it too, man, is that there's no secret to how you succeeded. I mean, honestly, you're doing things the right way. You're roasting your own meats. You're making your own fries. Making your own chips. I think too many people get away from that. It's almost like taking those shortcuts is not a good idea. Taking those shortcuts can almost be failure immediately. If you do things the right way, the way you're taught to do them, it's surprising how well you might actually do.
Yeah, I mean, it's, You know, you like they say, you got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything. And you have to be able to hang your hat on some quality. And I've always been the kind of guy like, I don't want to be like every other restaurant out there, you know.
Yeah.
You know, not knocking anybody else. But it's a great family. And I have a lot of really, really good friends in the business down here that you could call competition. But we're all collaborators in crime. And you know, there is a lot of some old school kind of misfit pirates, like you say, in this industry. And they're fun people. And we have a good time, but you got to really go after it and do something well and carve out your niche, man, and just rock it. Be consistent. Be consistent and be patient.
Well, I think you met one of those old school pirates in this industry and became a good buddy of yours when Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives came to your restaurant, right?
Oh, shit. I mean, that's a performance-enhancing drug. That show should be a banned substance. I mean... Yeah, Guy Fieri, holy smokes. I could do a whole week on Guy, you know, or Guido as we call him.
Yeah.
He you know, early on, you know, in the restaurant, I mean, literally we started off, you know, doing a couple hundred bucks a day and grinding. I could remember sitting there going, "Man, if I could do $750 a day,
wow.
I might not have to get a night job, you know."
Wow.
And
that's amazing.
My wife taught school, which was awesome, so she had a little bit of money coming in, and you know, we had insurance for the kids. And you know, I had some young ones. I had like a, you know, 4-year-old, I think, or about a 6-year-old, 6-year-old and a 12-year-old, so, or 10-year-old. So anyway, it was tough. You know, I went through the whole gambit where we really, really struggled. I mean, dude, I had my car repoed 14 months into it and just,
wow.
You know, it is a grind, man. And when they talk about making sure you have the right capital, I mean, a lot of restaurants fail before they get a chance to succeed.
Sure.
And that could have been my story. I could be still out there working with other people, and here I am 12 years later with, you know, many restaurants. And we turned the corner, though, and second year was good. Great publicity, you know, Southern Living and Mobile Bay Monthly, and that's what kind of put us on the radar for Triple D.
Yeah.
And that was, what an experience that is. I know you've met Guy. I know you've had him on your show. I mean, what you see is what you get. He is
completely
freaking awesome times 10, you know?
Yeah, I make the joke that, so I was on the very first day taping of Guy's Grocery Games, I was on season 1, episode 2, and
God,
he and I just hit it off. It was Guy and myself screaming dick jokes at each other across the set to the point where the producer was like, "Guys, you have to stop." And I'm just trying to make him laugh. I'm just saying stupid shit. He's saying stupid shit back because, you know, once you get him going, he gets going. You know, and it
My God, yeah, he's on fire. He's got such a sharp wit. He's
yeah.
I don't even try to make fun or funnies because he's like Panini. He just go sit in the corner. Yeah. Just get out of here.
I mean, I'm not trying to, obviously the one of the worst interviewing things ever is to bring somebody else on, to bring somebody on your show and talk about somebody else. But it's part of your story and how it happened. But you know, it's just talking one chef to another chef, talking about someone like Guy Fieri. Make no mistake, that dude can cook. Am I wrong?
Oh, absolutely. He's fearless. He's talented, you know, and, you know, it's not about, you know, like, you know, chef is a very abused term.
Oh, God.
And celebrity chef is a really just kind of an awkward invented term. But, you know, all my instructors at culinary school, I think about 90% of them never went to culinary school. They were grinders. It's still an industry that you could just go out, bust your ass and learn it, you know, apprentice. It's a trade. You know, when I went to the CIA in the early 80s, it was like a freaking trade school, man, you know.
That's exactly what it is, and make no mistake, that's what we do. We work with our hands, you know? I mean, there's no 2 cents about it. You can call yourself an artist, whatever you want to do. We work with our hands. That's what we do for a living.
Yeah, it is.
And
you know, people call it art, whatever. Yeah, you know, there's artistic qualities to it, absolutely. But, I mean, art, you can throw dog shit on the wall and call it art. I mean, it's a craft, you know?
Hang on. I got to clean my wall. I thought I made this picture for my wife, and apparently it's not.
Are you making art?
Well, you know, it's funny because I think everybody on the planet, and we're getting a little off track, but that's what happens here, man. It's like you and I sitting in the bar talking. But you have guys now who, you know, they work in the business for a year or 2 years, and then all of a sudden now they want to be called chef. And I'm like, bro, honestly, like, just go work with somebody for a while. You know, don't go get some experience.
If they watch the Food Network for a year and cook breakfast for their aunt once, they call themselves a chef.
Damn it. He caught
me. You know,
me.
It's a profession, man, like you said, and there's a lot of respect. And, you know, and going back to Guy, just before we get off that, he's a hell of a cook. You know, I've done road shows with him. You talk about a game changer. I mean, he's changed my life. You know, talent is very important, and discipline and patience, but you also need access. And getting exposure like that, national sure. exposure, was a huge game changer. And then just me staying humble and saying yes, you know, he was like, dude, I need some help at Atlantic City Food and Wine. Want to come, you know, get your ass up here. And that was it. You know, I'd get a 10-second phone call, and it was like, okay, talk to the wife. Where's our budget? I'm booking a plane ticket. I'm going to Atlantic City.
Right.
And I know I'm going to be busting my ass, but we'll have fun. We'll meet people. And he's fierce, and it's all about food with him. He's, you know, he understands what's put him there. You know, the TV persona, he's just that. That's who he is. He's just – that's his personality, man.
Yeah. Hey, I know people are going to ask me for not asking you, but when you get a trip like that or something like that happens, are you footing the bill yourself to get up there, or does he cover you once you get there kind of thing, you give it to his assistant? How does that work?
You know, early on, it's, you know, it's a little bit of both. I mean, there's opportunities sometimes that are presented to you
yeah.
that you just have to be able to jump in and not worry about getting paid a dollar, you know, because of the access it gets. So he wouldn't – it's not like I'll send you a ticket, I'll do this, I'll do that, especially early on because guy was – you know, I could remember being in – we were in New Orleans filming Tailgate Warriors. And his manager at the time, Tom, I had a car. I drove over because I'm 2.5 hours away. He's like, hey, I need sure. to go by Emerald's home office. You know, I know you got some wheels here. Give me a ride. I says, I will, as long as I can hang out. I thought, you know, I get to meet Emerald and hang out. Yeah, well, he was going to meet with Emerald's entire corporate staff. And they gave him about 4 hours of just, this is what we do.
Wow.
Because guy at that point, they said, you know – he was always like, you know, I'll ride this TV thing and have some fun for a couple of years, and I'll go back to being a restaurant guy. I mean, he never expected it to last more than 2 years. Never in his freaking million years.
That's amazing.
But it did, and then they're like, you know, we're like a startup corporation with cash flow. So early on, it wasn't about just fame and fortune and money. He meets guys, whether it's like you or who other people he connects with, and he's just going to throw shit out there and see what you do with it. And sometimes it's a challenge, and sometimes, you know, lucky I was in a position where my staff was so well-trained that I could sneak away. And I'd get there and go, you know, every restaurant we go into, we're going to get comp. There's going to be beers. I'm going to have a hotel room. You know, we're going to drink and get treated like rock stars. But, you know, I need to get a plane ticket, and I need to bring a pocket full of $100 bills for tips so a guy don't have to reach in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of it was like that. It was just sometimes you got to be willing to invest in yourself. And not even worry about it, not even ask the question like, well, are you going to send me a ticket or what do you mean? Or are you going to pay me if I come up and help you? You know, you forget it. You're out, man. You're not the big picture. Now, you know, there were other things, you know, like I did the roadshow for in 2011. He hired me to do the Guy Fieri roadshow as one of his sous chefs on stage. And we did this big production. And you know what? It was 2-3 weeks on the road, and he paid me very well to do it, you know.
Man, and I saw a video clip of that on YouTube of you were shooting those, doing that T-shirt gun, shooting that in the crowd. How fun is that, man?
Man, Chef, well, that was so crazy. You know, tour bus, bunch of wannabe rock stars driving around doing these food shows with music and DJs and skits and stories. And here's Guy just, I mean, I've never seen, there's very few people that can hold an audience like he can.
Yeah.
I mean, he literally hold an audience for 2 hours.
Amazing.
And keep entertained, and you know, food and stories and all this stuff. And you know, we come out with the music and the T-shirt cannons, and just it was really. I remember coming back after that tour, and we, you know, literally you get out done with the show, and you're out at the merch table, and you're signing autographs, and you're just breathing ether.
Wow.
And it's crazy. And then it's to the bus, and you're eating and having cocktails, and then you're off to the next town, and you know, eventually you pass out in the decks. We had so much fun. And I remember getting home and driving down 98 to Panini Pete's going, oh, man, this is my real life. I got to go back to work, man. It was great. But, you know, he was a game changer when it came to that. He was truly a trailblazer. And, you know, guy, he kind of travels with a posse. And,
yeah.
You know, he's like a rocker. And that's just who he is because he's fiercely loyal to friends and family. And he likes to have his buddies around. He loves to have people around him that he trusts and he can have fun with.
That's
and then
so cool.
Bring value, and that bring value, you know, that are willing to jump in and do stuff and open doors for people. And you know, we did that tour, and we'd go in to do a book signing. He was right in the middle of releasing his second book and New York Times bestseller, of course. And we'd walk into a bookstore or a Walmart or somewhere, and we would just take over the line and everything. And it'd be like, because we knew what to do and how to do it. And he wanted to move through as many people as he could and not leave anybody hanging. It was like, you get here, we're going to have the camera. You don't have to take a selfie. You're going to be able to download it on GuyFieri.com for free with a border on it. Just boom, boom, boom. Take all the cameos you want, but You know, that's it was just a well-oiled machine, and that's what you have to do. There's jump in. He's a freaking. He respects the grind, and he respects hard work. And like I said, he's a game changer, man, for me.
That sounds like he didn't forget where he came from, which is what's important, right?
Oh, and it's because of the opportunities. You know, it's definitely because of the opportunities. You know, a lot of people get sidetracked because, you know, he's got bleach blonde hair and wears excessive bling and all that stuff, and that's just
excessive bling.
That's just his personality, man. But he is so genuine, and he is such a good guy to have on your side. And, you know, that's one of the things that, going back to that Emerald trip, where I remember his manager was talking to the CEO of Emerald's World and saying, you know, what about, you know, his friends? You know, things are starting to change, and he's got kind of his cronies that hang around, whatever. And he's like, get used to it and find him a role, because he said Emerald was the same. He was fiercely loyal to a lot of his people, and the bigger they get, and the more people want of their time and space, you know, the less trusting that you are and the less trusting you can be. So the more he's going to want to be surrounded by people he knows and loves and knows that has his back. So, you know, everybody's got their buddies that they're drinking buddies, their friends, their whatever. They're going to be there for the time, man.
Makes total sense. I mean, and you're right. That whole thing, just really having the diners, drive-ins, and dives and just stuff like that. It does make a big difference, you know. So when we had Guy on the show, and I swear to God, we'll change the subject in a minute, Pete. But when Guy was coming on here, they were like, "Yeah, he can give you about 15 minutes." I was like, "Cool, you know, I'll take it. Whatever he can get is great." And you know, Scott and Mike helped hook that up, and thanks to those guys. But you know, Chef, he came on here, we didn't talk at all really about Food Network. I called the man Chef the entire time. We talked about the business. We talked about what's changing, what's good, what's bad in the business. Dude, he stayed on the phone with me here on the show for about an hour.
He's definitely a very smart businessman. I'll tell you one more story, and then we'll try to get off. But when he did my show, you know, we had a blast. It was early on. I had seen it, but, you know, not really. You know, it was season three. We were at the beginning of season three. So the show had only been on for a year.
Still pretty new.
Yeah, very new. So we hit it off. We were still open for business. You know, it was, you know, they hadn't, you know, your restaurant wasn't on lockdown. It was crazy. But we go out that night, and realistically, he was shooting another place in the neighborhood. I went to get some pictures signed after we were done. He's like, "Dude, sit down, have a beer. Man, that mozzarella was crazy." And we're going on and on. He goes, "Where can we go see the show tonight?" It was a Monday night, and season three was getting ready to premiere, and he wanted to see it. You know, the new season and new film, and he was excited, you know, real giddy about the product. We go down, take over one of my buddy's restaurants, and we cook for the whole table. You know, we're drinking and cooking in the back, and then he invites me to go to Biloxi the next day, and we go there where he's shooting. Again, it's just kind of hang out, and he's like, I remember him sitting in the damn Camaro going, "Dude, you know, I can't hang out this afternoon. Let's just want you to head over to Biloxi." I was like, "All right, let me check. I talked to the old lady. I got to set some things up." He's like, "What? You better man up, motherfucker." But we're eating at a restaurant over there the first night, and he gets off the phone with the Food Network, and he starts going on about, "Listen, guys, man, just, you know, keep working hard. I just got off the phone with the network, and the ratings are going great. And don't forget to thank the producers and the writers and the editors, and just let's enjoy the ride. You know, I know sometimes I want to drag you out for a beer, whatever. Let's, you know, work hard." He says, "I'm just the freaking hood ornament. You guys are the ones that make it happen. They're the ones that make it happen.
Right.
This will all be gone." You know, little did he know it was going to go another 10 years and still going strong.
Unbelievable.
But I was listening to him going, "Shit, this guy's legit, man. He's not just bleach blonde hair and a knucklehead. You know, he's a really, really strong businessman."
Well, pulls it all back around. You know, he's also, you know, from that same generation of, you know, he got in the business to cook food and be a part of the restaurant business. That was his job. That's what he wanted to do. You know, all the success I've had doing outside things from the restaurant business, I talk about it all the time. And I'm sure Guy, he agreed with me when we talked about it. I'm sure you would too. Those things are a product of 20 years and more of hard work in the business. Like, that didn't just happen out of nowhere because, you know, you're in the right place at the right time. It came because of hard work and a lot of respect earned in the business, you know, and that's what happened to him too. You know, it's not like, I didn't go to culinary school and get out and say, "You know what? I'm going to be Emeril Lagasse." No, I got out thinking I'm going to make the best food I possibly can and be the best at this I possibly can be.
Put yourself in a position to go learn more and go really hone your skills. And it's that foundation. And, you know, there's very few people that are, you know, in his level with that. There's a reason that he's done so good. And, you know, fierce work ethic. You know, I remember doing stuff with him on stage during the show, and running back and forth. Gorilla Rich was one of the other sous chefs, and I was pretty much heading up the food. And I remember he was making this sangria glaze for some shrimp dish, and I kept turning it down. Every time I turned around, Gorilla kept turning it up, and I'm like, what the frick? And we're on stage, and by the time he gets ready to play, you know, it was scorched. And he was like, he puts his hand over the mic. He's like, what the fuck, Panini? You know, you burnt the sauce, whatever. I'm like, son of a bitch. And this is just like for the demo. This is like the show food.
Yeah, yeah.
And it had to be right. And look, I go running in the back. We had a little stage kitchen because we cooked for the VIPs on the stage. And luckily, right, I had backup and we let it work. You know, and he was like, he brought it up later. He's like, dude, what the fuck? And, you know, luckily Gorilla was like, man, every time he turned it off, I turned it back on. It was my fault. And I was like, thanks for taking the hit.
Wow. He took the bullet for you.
Yeah, you know, well, no, he almost threw me under the bus. He did it. He's the one that kept turning it on.
Yeah, so. I got you. But yeah. I thought for sure he would be like, yeah, Pete, why'd you do that?
Yeah, he fessed up, which was good. But it was, I was just like, man, reality is nobody would have known that was burnt, and nobody would have cared. And he could have fed it to people, and they would have licked it off his toes. You know, he had the audience eating out of his hand. But he'd always want stuff to be right.
Hey, don't ever tell me I'm licking something off Guy Fieri's toes again. That made me feel uncomfortable. Or maybe it didn't. Yeah, I can't tell.
Weird, right when I said it, it came back. But anyway, Guido's—he's the best man, and you know, he's opened a lot of doors for a lot of people, man, and he's just a good dude.
Well, make sure you tell him next time you talk to him, you talk to me, and we became buddies, because it's always getting the good word in, you know.
Sure will, man. Sure will.
Hey, so but one of the fun things that you've done, and it's something that it's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you so badly, man, was You've taken all the stuff you've done, and you know, you really truly give back. And Mess Lords is one of the most amazing things I've ever heard in my life. And I tell you what, there's three charities in the world you'll get me every time, and it's obviously with animals, with kids. I have three daughters, and then with veterans and people in the service. And what you guys do is unfreaking believable. And I don't know what I got to do, if I got to give you a bunch of money, if I got to fill out like a 10-page application, but
no, money's better than application. We'll have to get you out on the road for sure, man. We're always looking for a few new chefs on the roster, man.
Man.
And I'll tell you what, the Mess Lords is an amazing group of guys.
Yeah, talk about it.
I know we were going to segue off of this subject, but, you know, Mess Lords were started by Guy, man. You know, Guy basically, he did a few military tours and was in high demand. You know, Navy Entertainment is kind of our sponsor.
Yeah.
And MWR, their Morale, Welfare, Recreation. Karen Fritz heads it up. She's a brilliant human being that just cares so much about the men and women of our service. So, you know, he got basically, you know, they wanted a little more of him to come out. And he's a big celebrity. So he's making an appearance and shaking hands and cutting up in the kitchen and judging contests. Well, you know, they had an idea of making more of it and getting chefs to come out and really work with the CSs and cook for the guys, you know. And that's kind of how it started. And he basically said, take Stretch. From Grinders in Kansas City, myself.
Mm-hmm. Great hot sauce, Gorilla, by the way.
Oh yeah, he's got some good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Gorilla, and then there was Mike Hard and Boss Man from Hodads, and he said, "You guys see what you can do with this." And long story short, you know, Navy didn't know what the hell to do with us. They're used to people doing a show, like we're going to stand up there and here's how to make salad, and they're all going to be sitting at tables going, "Yay!" We're like, "No, we're getting in the galley. We're slinging hash. We're going to throw down. We're going to feed them. We're going to cut up." And it just, we've been doing it for over 10 years now.
That's so amazing.
Hundreds of thousands of meals, bro. I mean, I've been everywhere. I've been to Japan, Guam, Djibouti, Bahrain, Spain, Italy, the UK, Cuba, Puerto Rico, Bucharest. You know, I've been out on aircraft carriers and submarines.
Wow.
And hand trip carriers. I freaking landed on carriers and planes and got shot off the deck 3 days later going, how the hell did food do this, you know?
Jesus.
I mean, beignets. I've cooked beignets like every freaking where on the Enterprise in Japan. I mean, it's really amazing. And the men and women love it so much. It feeds their soul. You know, we cut up. We get a little music playing in the galley. The officers lighten up a little bit. And we show them things. We may take a simple chicken parm that they're cooking, and they're stuck with, you know, mediocre ingredients, especially on the ships.
Right.
So, you know, they'll be taking a pre-breaded Tyson chicken breast or something and drop it in the fryer for 10 or 15 minutes and hammer it and then pull it out, hit it with some sauce right out of a can, top it with cheese, then bake it in the oven for 10 minutes, and then go to the line. And this is something simple. We just go, look, guys, here's what you do. We're going to take the sauce. We're going to heat it up. Yeah. What kind of spices do you have here? What kind of herbs do you have here? Let's jazz it up. Take the chicken, 5 minutes, and get it up, you know. Get it with the hot sauce and the cheese. The sauce melts the cheese. Put it on the line. It tastes better. It's quicker, and you can chew it still. So they're like, oh, my God, this is so amazing. So we do have some teaching moments and some technique moments. But let me tell you, Chef, I got to get you out there because it's life-changing. You know, you talk about when you see how hard these guys work and the commitment that these men and women have and the teamwork and right. and the sacrifices, everything we take for granted, sitting here doing a podcast and drinking a bourbon and, you know, somebody's birthday and somebody's anniversary and life and deaths and graduations and soccer and games. You know, there. Somebody's out on a ship right now missing all that shit.
Unbelievable.
They're missing all of it.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, and yeah, and you get to take them a little something and they go, wow, that was really amazing, you know, and reminded me of home, reminded me of grandma. It's food is so powerful, bro. It's so big, man.
You know, I end every show on this particular program. I end it with saying that food is one of the most important things that we have in life. Everything important in life happens around food. Let's make sure we give it the time it deserves. And I think that's something that you totally embrace there by saying that, because you're right, man. And I talk about it all the time. Like, I'm married at 10. I'm a 4.5. That happened because of food. I have a beautiful house, 3 children. I have a great job. I'm talking to you right now. It's all because of food, right? Food has provided me all those things. So I take
it
incredibly seriously.
What, man?
Like it's I have such a respect for it, man. Like it's you're so right about that, and it's amazing where it can take you. But you got to give it the time. You can't go work
yeah,
2 years
you know,
in a restaurant.
Experiences are second to none. But like it is, you have to be committed. You have to be patient.
Yeah.
And you just have to grind, man. It's not about money. You know, I finally, you know, yeah, I got my car repoed and all that stuff. But, you know, I can pay my bills now. And
did you ever get it back, by the way?
Prepared, and, you know, I'm not starving. But, you know, it took decades to get to that point. It's a hard
for
work
sure.
and low-wage industry. But I love it so much. And, like, I mean, that cliche, you know, love what you do and you'll never work a day in your life. And who freaking works harder than we do? And it's just blast.
It's true. And I never really believed that until probably, I'd say, the past couple of years, man. I mean, I really kind of have embraced that. And you're right. It's once you really kind of understand what it is that we do, our job is to make people happy. You know, our job as chefs, and I'm going to ask you about that in a second, too. I think as chefs, we also have to be, you know, a bit of kind of teachers. We have to inspire people. We have to teach people. We have to make people want to do better when it comes to working in a kitchen, you know? And I think that, it's important to understand those sort of things. I told you on the phone earlier that I just, you know, I say it all the time that you don't know where you're going to go if you don't know where you came from. And understand that history was a big part of culinary school for me, was to understand that. And that was a big eye-opener thing. But I think once you get to the point, and it's taken me almost nearly 25 years to get to the point where I feel like, you know what? I do what I love. I don't really work every day. It's amazing. I'm very happy. I'm good.
And you know, and the key is that you stuck it out, you know, because there's nothing easy out there. Anybody that's successful, they're working their ass off. And our business is tough. You know,
yeah.
We are nights and weekends and holidays. And,
yep.
and that's just the grind. That's, you know, but
it's
big
dues.
Deal. You know, do you want to just work 9 to 5 and go home and sit on the couch and watch TV? Or, you know, I mean, our life is so cool. And food is so powerful, like I said. And you know, I'm a classic overachiever. You talk about yourself. I mean, I'm sitting here talking to you and talking about Japan and Africa. And
it's crazy,
going,
bro. You just used the word – look, you just used the word Djibouti to me, and you were serious. Like, that wasn't a punchline. Like, you were like, yo, I've been to Djibouti. And, like, I'm like, oh, okay. That's amazing, though, because you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, could you think about that? If you look back to when you were, you know, slinging pies at Pizza Hut, right? To where you are now, you've been all over the world doing amazing things. You've been basically working a rock show with Guy Fieri. You have 6 amazing restaurants. I mean, you've got a wife. You got your car back from being repoed. Like, and here you are sitting here having a bourbon, chatting with me, another chef, and we're just talking shop and running our mouths. It is really amazing to think about, you know?
Well, the cool thing is, like you're saying, when you get to a point where you start to appreciate it yourself, and I think everybody can hit that when they get a little more mature and become a father or a mother, and you know, and mentoring and helping. You know, our job, especially now, my role completely changed. You know, from wanted to open my own restaurant to now I'm trying to build a restaurant company and I'm working on cookbooks. I do my own podcast, you know, HOTP podcast, hot off the press, and products I'm working on design. And there's so many different things, but more importantly, just running a restaurant company now. I can't do the things I normally used to do. You know, I have to manage the managers. And when I say that, it's really not managing, it's leading. It's all about leading and teaching and developing. And, you know, somebody took the time to teach me the importance of having a structured kind of a life, a disciplined life, man, and doing things right. And you do line checks for the right reason, you know, and having facility. I mean, we just took over a restaurant we bought on the Causeway Head Seafood Shed. An awesome, iconic brand. Been there 17 years. Oh, yeah. But I'm going to tell you, the place was a dump, man. It was so beat out and so depressing. And they had lost over $1 million in sales over the last 7 years. And just from mismanagement, great people. I mean, mom and pop Hall of Famers. But, you know, they had an incredible 10-year run. And then they had some health issues and pulled back. And it was basically being really poorly managed. And it's like, man, how do people try to get by with this? It's like, like it's a profession. Have some standards. Take it serious. Treat it with respect, man.
For sure, for sure. And by the way, I'm getting a message here from Food Fire Knives on Instagram. He says, "Fuck it, I'll take my 9-to-5 for now, for sure." He works at one of those like high-end office building, you know, cafe type places where they're actually like. Nice. Making their own stuff and like doing like, you know, making their own bacon and doing things like that. But it's a 9-to-5 gig that pays great, has benefits. None of those jobs were around. We got out of school, were they?
Hey, I ain't complaining. I'm just disappointed.
Hey,
when I opened Panini Pete's for 6 years, I didn't work any nights. So I'm staying back a little. We were breakfast and lunch, man. I was in there early, but we closed at 2:30 every day. I was out of there by 4 or 5. You know, and we were closed Sundays for the first 3 or 4 years. You know, I was always in there working and prepping. But, you know, it's a beautiful thing. If you can do it, God dang it, that's a beauty, man. You know, when I was at the University of Alabama, I really had a really, really good quality of life. So the industry's changed so much. Think about the Blue Aprons of the world and all these other things. Or like you said, these handcraft, you know, he's in an office building putting out badass food.
Right.
You know, and off on the weekend. So it's out there. You got to look.
But, you know, a guy like him, though, he worked his ass off to get there, too. Like, he didn't just show up and get that job. Like, you know, some opportunities and worked his butt off and had some experience and made it happen that way, which is a good thing, man.
Especially a job like that, man.
Right? He had to kill him. That's a married woman right there. That's what that is.
But, you know, and the industry's getting better. You know, we work on really trying to give our guys a decent quality of life too. And it's, you know, it's still full service restaurants and we're open 7 days a week, lunch and dinner and most of them, but you know, vacations and benefits and sitting back going, you know what, you know, you need a Friday, Saturday off for this. Let's work it out. Right. Now, you know, it's a restaurant business. You're not going to get a lot of them off,
but if you need one, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. But you know, it's not going to be like in the old days where shit, I mean, you wouldn't even ask, you know,
I wouldn't ask.
I mean, 10 years, 15 years, I don't think I ever took any time off, period, you know?
Dude, I remember running this restaurant down in Daytona, Florida, and nobody else could work the pass. Nobody could. I was a sous chef. Nobody could work. The executive chef couldn't work the pass on a Friday, Saturday night. He couldn't handle it. So it was me. It was me every Friday and Saturday night. And I remember doing a Mother's Day weekend, and I must have
worked. Yeah, you're not going anywhere.
Fucking A, dude. I must have done 48 hours in like a – it was crazy. I think I slept like 6 hours that weekend. I was there open to close. It was crazy just getting pounded, you know? I mean, you got to be careful what you say in this day and age, but
– Oh, I know.
You know what I'm talking about. Please. Like, I'm just calling tickets, and the pasta guy quits, and you're like, shit. And next thing you know, now I'm over there running the pasta station. They're coming back and calling tickets, and – It's the shit you put up with in the business, man. But it brings up an interesting topic, man. You're a guy who owns restaurants and runs businesses. I want to ask you because maybe you have the answer. Because we've been trying to find the answer for months now here on this program. How come our industry is the only industry where it's okay and people are okay with it and nobody bitches or complains or anything that will work 60 hours a week and it's like, yeah, that's what you do?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, because it's just, you know, that's the historic, the foundation we're lying on. We're just, people will do that. It's expected. One, the restaurants are open so damn much. You know, it's kind of a rite of passage. It's changing, sure. You know, and we're dinosaurs. You know, Nick DiMario, one of my business partner, man, he's a badass, and we worked together for years. I remember hiring him as an assistant manager and, you know, working 6 days a week, and you get to eat for 10 minutes off the salad bar and all this stuff, and just breaking his balls. And now this guy, you know, I'm a pretty good restaurant operator, and, you know, Nick's a great restaurant operator. And, you know, I was able to hire him about 4 years ago to come and work with me. And he's even he got equity in some of our businesses. And we talk about it all the time that we're dinosaurs, and, you know, these people don't want to work 80 hours a week. You know, 60 is not bad. If you can get them 55, they're like golden. You know, but I mean, if you want to be successful, what are you going to do, man? I mean, you're going to work 8 hours a day and then go play freaking kickball? I mean, come on. We get to play with knives and fire and food and and scream. And so intense. Like, you talk about working the past like that. You know, when it's done, I mean, how good do you feel just talking about that, knowing that not only did you do it, you know, when you know that not everybody can.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Look at that team and go, guys, there's a few, very few people in the world can pull off the shit we just pulled off, man.
Completely. 110%. No doubt about it. And that beer and that cigarette, I don't smoke anymore, but back then I did. That beer and that cigarette, when that service is over, holy shit, that's good.
Woo!
That's the best one yet. But I think here's the thing, though. I think when you do that.
It's glory, man. It was the glory.
That's it. That's because, I mean, you know, it's working with a group of people. It's working with, you know, and accomplishing something, I think. And I think it comes from, you know, old school, like you said, in the business. But, dude, there was a day where if you were the chef and I was working in your restaurant and you needed me, I was working lunch, and you were like, hey, someone so-and-so called out. I'd be like, yeah, I'll work. And work double.
Just stay.
That's what you do.
You didn't even ask. It just was expected. Yeah. It's like, oh, hey, so-and-so quit. I need you to work all weekend. I'll give you a couple days off maybe next month, you know. Okay.
Yeah, okay, sure. But I think that's all those things that we're talking about right there is how you get to that word chef, I think. I think that's what leads you to it, you know. I mean, if you've been through a service where you work for, you know, 15 hours in the middle of the day and your time is up and you're finally going to go home, but you can't go home because your dishwashers are out back all coked up and can't come back in. So now you got to wash dishes to finish the night off. I mean, those are just experiences. I'm not saying that happened, but it may have, but it may not have, but I'm not pointing to anybody. But, you know, that's what you do. And you don't, but I would never leave anybody like that. You just, that's, we're a team. We're together.
Well, one of the coolest things that we strive for in our properties with the front of the house is the back of the house is inherently so much more team oriented, even though we sometimes hate each other and motherfuck each other and work our asses off. You know, we're so dependent on everybody to pull their weight and do their thing. And in that rush, it's just a symphony of just torture and chaos. And, totally. You know, front of the house is more, they tend to be more independent in my section and my work, and they can be a little more catty and backstab. And we work hard and we talk about, you know, I talk about that when people are like, we don't bust our ass in the back and buy raw ingredients and do all this work to create a good place for you guys to be average out front. You got to kick ass. You got to help each other out. You got to be there for each other constantly. Walk just every time you're back there in the kitchen, open your eyes and look at what the fuck's going on.
That's it.
But I can't say fuck in a lineup anymore. But look at what's going on. And
wait, is that for real? Wait. Are you really don't or no?
No way. I try not. Well, I'm kind of a potty mouth, but
of course
it's
hard
to do that. And it's hard. It's hard to nowadays. You know, somebody's going to get offended.
And
HR, I have a freaking huge HR department now because you just have to, man. Yeah. It's amazing the stuff that we have to deal with now. And I think about what would these snowflakes do in the 80s, man?
Snowflakes. I love it.
I was like, my God, they'd go home crying every day, need therapy, and never they'd never go back.
Bro, Lonnie Hewat is one of my mentors. He's probably my main mentor. And I'll tell you what, I worked at the Jefferson Hotel in Richmond, Virginia with him. And this motherfucker.
You worked in some cool places, man. Florida, Virginia.
Yeah, I actually worked with Sean Brock, as a matter of fact, in the Jefferson Hotel, which is pretty cool.
Oh, I love that dude. He's a beast.
He's the man. But Lonnie is the man, too. And Lonnie would, God, he put me through the ringer. I was an intern with him. But then after that, he invited me to Florida with him. But, oh, this motherfucker. He would go, and like for banquet stuff, Chef, he would go, and I'd sit in with him in these meetings he'd have with people. And then he would just say all this crazy shit. Right, and then he'd come back to me, and he goes, "Can we pull off all that shit I just told him?" And you don't say no. you're like, "Yes, chef, of course." He's like, "Good, we got to make an ice cabin that's 12 feet tall with a working freaking elf that comes out." I obviously, but I'm like, "What? Just shit like that?" I'm like, "Dude, what are you even talking about?"
You know, and you got to embrace the pain, go balls out. It's funny. I worked for a guy once, and you know, I was the freaking troubleshooter, man. I was the pinch hitter. He'd be like, you know, if I had a party for 40 next week, I wouldn't even tell you about it. I wouldn't even – you wouldn't be the guy. But if I had a party for 500, you know, in like 6 hours, I wouldn't want anybody else by my side than you, because I could pull that shit off and just go, let's go, man.
Yeah, that's it, right?
Oh, that's stupid, awesome. But we're going to do it, man.
But see, that's the thing. You work for those guys like that, and they'll make a comment like that to you. Like, they'll just kick your ass for – weeks on end, and every once in a while they'll throw you that comment, and you're like, "Oh hell yeah, that's my dude."
Then you keep running. I had this little Italian chef I used to work with, and he just hated me. I thought, you know, he'd make me go stand in the corner and watch. He says, "You go over there. You watch me. Come on, big guy. I'm gonna do your job and my job, faster than you." You know, and then he'd sit over there and just shame you. You know, and he was one of those chefs, old school, that make you just like you'd prep something, and when you were done, he'd come over and go, "It's wrong," and throw it in the trash, and you'd have to start over with no time. But, you know, all of a sudden, that one day he comes up, and you're in the middle of something, and you're 4 months into it, and I think they just realize that, well, I can't run him off. He must be serious. You know, they have this massive knowledge that they want to share,
right?
But they want to make sure you're worthy of that knowledge.
Sure.
Because they have worked hard to earn that. And then they walk over, and they show you something with a knife cut, or they show you something in a pan, or how to stir this, or this subtle taste, or add this little thing. And the room just freaking, the world lights up for you, man.
Oh.
You're like, wow,
yeah,
that was amazing.
Those colors get a little brighter in your brain when you're looking at something. You're like, yeah, I get it, you know?
Yeah, that energy, man, it's really cool. I'll tell you, I couldn't do anything else, man. I work all the time. Now people say, you know, I got a lot of restaurants and we're doing good. But, you know, people say, well, when are you off? You know, and I'm like, I'm never off. I work every day, you know. And if I need to do something, I go do what I need to do. But
do you ever get this one? Hey, what's your retirement plan?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. What you got?
Yeah, we're like musicians. We don't retire. We just keep going. Mm. We just keep going, man. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to get into, you know, acquiring real estate now. I own two of the properties out of the four down here. And, you know, we do – you got to have some kind of an exit strategy, because otherwise it'll just – you know, the babe, the girl that you love will chew you up and spit you out, you know, one day.
She stays the same age. We keep getting older, right?
Yeah, I mean, hell, I'm 54 now, dude. I'm like ancient, man. Wow. And it's tough. I got kids in college. You know, I got tuition. I got all this stuff, man. It's crazy.
Man.
But, you know,
let me ask you this. Can you outdrink your kids, or are your kids old enough to drink?
Totally, man. Well, my son's 21, but he barely drinks, man. Oh. You know, so cool. It's so funny because, you know, we're like these parents that, you know, just like raise them to just, you know, I don't know, man, just to respect that stuff and not be, you know, I kind of got my partying days behind me.
Sure.
I was, you know, Fort Lauderdale was such excessive day, you know, in the 70s, 80s, and it was just retarded. It was so bad that I kind of calmed down and got a little more serious. You know, I still like to party, but they don't, you know, and I don't know how, you know, my wife, I give her all the credit, you know. See, I'm not afraid to talk about, you know, my degenerate past. She's an angel in their eyes. Now, they don't realize she went to college, too, and I can tell stories.
Oh,
but we were holding off on that.
Well, I joke with my daughters, man. My daughters are – I have twins that just turned 11. And
Drink you already?
Oh, well – look, brother, I'll tell you what. And this is clearly not acceptable in the world, but when they were 6 years old, they could tell you the difference between an ale and a lager by tasting it. My job as a father was done. Talking about an awesome party trick. But I was telling him, I was like, listen, you guys, just know that you're not going to want me to come hang out with your college friends, because I will destroy them in beer pong and drinking. They won't have – I said, do you understand? Like, I'm a chef. Like, I pretty much cook food and drink. That's what I do.
We're professional.
Like, I definitely – yeah, like, we have a degree in drinking. You understand this? Like – I don't know when the last time I've had too much to drink was, because I don't remember. So
yeah, all the stupid stuff they did. We invented it.
Yeah, you know,
we perfected it. Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, and that's sometimes that's part of the allure. It's hard work and hard play. And you know, I mean, we just lost an icon in Anthony Bourdain. And you know, I mean, reading Kitchen Confidential. Yeah. You know, it was a rite of passage, and I made a lot of young aspiring chefs read it, because they kind of lost touch with that crazy world. And there were parts of it, obviously, you know, I never did heroin, you know, as far as anybody knows. And we got, there was a lot of crazy excess, but you know, it's a wild life, man. You know,
well, it's still, even though, like, you know, you got kids and a family man and doing it and a businessman, and I'm the same way, but I'll tell you what, if we got together, you, me, and a couple of chefs hanging out, nah, it's all, gloves are off. We just, it's pretty fun, man. I mean, I was just in Boston doing an event for No Kid Hungry last Tuesday, and boy, did we have a good time. At one point, Pete,
up on the roof.
Yeah, up on the roof. That's right. Yeah, it was kind of a mess, but yeah, we were on the roof. It was a lot of fun. Ooh. Chef Nick Calais, who was a great guy, and it really is. It's a great event. It was a lot of fun. But later on that night, my sous chef and I were walking through the streets of Boston wearing the robes that were in the hotel rooms. Mm-hmm. And we were like, "Why are we doing this?" Like, because they were free in the hotel rooms. Why wouldn't you wear them?
Because I look good, damn it.
You're damn right. He's got his sunglasses on. He's got short, like freaking basketball shorts on, just walking through the streets. But it's awesome. Well, those are great stories, you know?
It is a crazy life, and it's perfectly acceptable in what we do. And the good thing is you get up the next day, and as long as you get show up to work and bust your ass, you just – it doesn't matter, you know? And that's one of the reasons why, you know, it's a cool business, and you talk about it, and I've said it. Just, hey – I'm a classic overachiever. You could still get in there and just work hard and just drink not too much and just stay close, you know, and culinary school, my God. I mean, I got perfect attendance at the CIA, which is crazy, you know.
Did you really?
I also got, you know, yeah, I also got a DUI up there the day before menus and facilities, you know.
Oh,
and
my
had
God.
To go and present my restaurant to Ferdinand Metz and everybody else with the hangover of a lifetime, you know.
Wow.
I mean, it was brutal, but I never let it get in the way. I said, if I want to go out and party this hard, I still need to get up the next day and go do what I got to do. And it, no matter how bad it hurt, no matter how dysfunctional I was or how many times I felt like throwing up or threw up, I still showed up and played. You know, went in and played, man.
That's it. You still got to be there ready to go. You want to be a number one draft pick, then every day you got to be a number one draft pick, no matter what happened the day before, you know?
It's that discipline, man. You know, it's like you don't get anywhere staying at home. You know,
well, listen, it's funny because I want to talk to you about just. I mean, God, we're already over an hour in here, which is crazy. That's how fast it goes. But you know, you get somebody
over an hour. Oh my God, you're gonna freak out when I send you the bill for this one.
Did you get my credit application? Just checking.
Yeah, your card got declined.
What shit.
Man.
I got to go. No,
I knew you were going to give me the fake one.
Did I use the block number so you couldn't see? So CIA is a funny thing, man. So school for me, I love CIA. I'm actually a proponent for culinary school. I think it's great for certain people. For me, I told you I needed the discipline. I needed to have that in my life. But the program has definitely changed a little bit since you were there for sure and definitely since I was there. It's much different now. Do you see these kids coming out and trying to get jobs with you who have been at CIA or – you know, who've done other culinary schools, I guess I should say, too, but how it's almost, it's different.
Yeah, it's scary. I'm on the Alumni Advisory Council there, too. I'm on the board, so.
That's very cool.
We have meetings up there every year. I meet in, you know, Hyde Park campus.
You should holler at me next time, man. I'm like 45 minutes from there.
Well, I'll probably be up there in October, you know, if all goes well. We have next board meeting up there. I got some other shit going on that may prevent me, but I'll hit you up for sure. But you know, it's changing a lot. The industry's changing a lot. You know, it's a 4-year college now. If you want it to be, like I said, when I went there and when you were there, you know, it was a trade school, man, and it was pretty, you know, very military style. Like you said,
completely.
The disciplines were there. They taught you the foundation. It wasn't about trendy stuff.
Brother, you had to yield in the hallway and say hello to chefs, even chefs you didn't even know. You had to yield. Oh. Say hello, chef. You were shit showered, shaven every day. If you were on time, you were late. And you were only allowed to be late twice.
Yeah, it was pretty hardcore, man. But those were the disciplines. They really instilled that in me. And there were certain things where I said, I'm going to do my best. But, you know, that was the biggest thing. My guys are a stickler, man. They know I'm a stickler. Uniforms, all kinds of crazy stuff, man. And I'm kind of old school like that. You know, fix your hat and don't wear it like you're out on the street. And, you know, I don't go over the top, but for what we do, I'm very high on standards because it's a profession. Like if you sit in Sunset Point on the line and you look out into the dining room, there's an area where it's an open kitchen. And above the wall, when you're looking out, it's not for the patrons, it's for the chefs.
Oh, I love the story.
They're wrapped around the whole kitchen and there is weights, measures, primal cuts, big CIA logo, and there's about 40 chefs' pictures up there that are big, like 20 by, you know, 15. And there are people that have just influenced me, my career, and just the industry as a whole. Everything from Escoffier and Julia Child to Emerald and Marcus Samuelson, and, you know, people that I've, you know, Selena Tio that I've worked with. And there's, and I've got a real good mix of Latin chefs and female chefs and, you know, African-American and everybody just, and I tell them all, this is a profession, guys. Look up there. These are the guys, man, that are just, be proud of what you do. Be proud of the plates you serve. This is not just a job. And so, I'm willing to let, you know, 10 of them just freaking ignore it because that one that you're going to get that spark. And that, you know, and I've mentored several kids to go to the CIA, and some of them are doing really, really good. And, you know, some people come to me, like you said, and I said, it depends on what you want to get, what you want to get out of life.
Right.
You know, what are your ultimate goals? Because it could be the best thing for you, or at certain stages of your life, especially if you're a little bit older and you may even have a kid, you're like, you may not be willing to, you or may not be smart to take on that debt. You know, go work with a badass and get paid to learn versus, you know, student debt right now. Holy shit, dude.
Expensive, brother.
We started a run up there. I'll tell you a little bit about this. We have a run called Run for Your Knives.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about it. Mike and Scott asked me about it. I had to work. They were going to get me to come to it this past year, but I ended up having to work, so I couldn't go.
My title sponsors, man, Ergo Chef. They are the best.
Mike and Scott, they're just such good dudes, man. I can't say enough good about those guys.
And talented, man. Their knives are badass.
Yep.
ErgoChef.com. Put in CIA20. Get 20% off, baby.
All right.
But anyway.
Let's save with that. So, we won't use my code then.
Robert Kabakoff, one of my classmates, you know, who also was on the board, he started this 5K run 8 years ago, Run for Your Knives. And it was all about, you know, promoting leadership and a little better health in our industry of excess, and also to help students with scholarships. So shit, last year was our seventh year. We raised over $62,000 in scholarships, direct impact students. And we actually did so good with it. You're going to love this. So last year we started our own foundation called the PR Foundation. So check that out, prfoundation.com. And Robert and I, you know, I have a young man that works for me named John Stewart. I call him Sheriff. He was a special ed kid, and that we just took under our wing. And, you know, he's been with me. God, he's 29 years old, I think, now, you know, and he's been with me since he was in high school and, you know, hanging around and, you know, taught him how to shave and groom and all this stuff. And this kid's great. So I always wanted to do like a prom dinner for him. One night, next to his senior year, I think he was about 20 because they graduated 21. He says, I got a girlfriend, and I want to come and have prom dinner here. And I was like, Johnny, you know we're not open at night, you know. And he's like, I know, but we want to eat here. I said, you know what? You're damn right. Come on. What are you going to have? He says, I want spaghetti. I said, you sure you want spaghetti, man? You know, you're going to be in a tux. You're going to be jazzed up. He's like, we love spaghetti.
Okay.
So John and his little girlfriend Amanda come in. I got panini pizza set up with candlelight and tablecloths.
Oh, look at you, dude.
Do a dinner for the kid. And I called my brother-in-law. I had this cool old Pontiac chromed out, like a 52 Pontiac or something. We drove him in Pontiac. It was just this awesome night.
That's awesome, dude. That's so
his
cool.
Parents were very – he had a dad who was – he was a double amputee Vietnam vet. Wow. And his mom was very, very mentally challenged, even more so than him. So he came from a really rough situation. And his girlfriend's mom was just so blown away and just in tears by what we did. And that it was a great, safe place for them to come and eat and not have to worry about the bill and the tip and feeling awkward. And so it was such a moving experience for me. I said, you know, we did it again the next year. He had one more year of school. And he said, you know, my friend Dalton got jealous because I had a girlfriend and he's got a girlfriend now, so we need a table for four. I said, you got it, Johnny. Table for four. What are you going to have? Spaghetti, of course. He goes, we don't need a car, though, because Dalton's dad's getting a limo. So
Okay. Anyway,
we started a foundation, and what we work with is military charities, which is, you know, obvious, and then special needs adults and kids, as well as no-kill animal shelters, which, you know, you said you're big animal advocates.
Wow, yeah.
So we started this thing last year, and it all came from the CIA, and it came from a, you know, that giving kind of mentality that we have in this industry. And, you know, we all do pitch in and we do help each other out. You know, last year, shit, I had a great year on grocery games, won $20,000, and I gave it all to the foundation, man. I gave it all away, dude.
Wow.
I didn't keep any of it. And it's And we're going to do some races down here to raise more money for those things. And that's really, really cool when you can get to a level to just help people out. And it blows me away. You know, that car that I got repoed, I think it was probably 2 years later, you know, when things got better in the restaurant and I finally went and bought myself a new car. You know, I gave that car away. I gave it to somebody that needed a car. You know, I mean, I was able to, I got it back. I had to go pay the repo man to get it out and ended up paying it off. But I mean, it was 2 or 3 years later, you know, when I had enough money to get myself a new car, I gave that car away to somebody, man. And it wasn't like all of a sudden I was a baller. It was just like, fuck, it felt good, man. And somebody needed it. And I, you know, when you get in a position, you can help somebody. Damn it. Do it, man. That's just it. Do it.
That's it. It's easy. Pete, you're an inspiration, brother. You're an inspiration, Panini. You listen to you. You're doing all this great stuff, man. You've got so much history in the business, so much experience in the business. Much respect, dude. Seriously. You guys make sure you got to follow him on Instagram, at Panini Pete on Instagram. And, of course, check out the what do you call the podcast?
Hot Off the Press podcast, HOTPpodcast.com.
So HOTP podcast. I'm going to subscribe to it right now. Make sure you check that out.
Off the Panini Press.
Off the Panini Press. There you go.
And, of course,
make sure you look out for the Mess Lords, because those guys are doing great stuff. And of course, the CIA, the run that you guys do up there, it's in Octoberish, is that right?
Yeah, this year I think it's the first week of October. Okay. You know, it varies. It comes in conjunction with Homecoming weekend. We do it just for students right now. You know, it's free to all the students. We get the whole event underwritten by other alumni, where they get backpacks and swag bags. I've got, you know, Ergo will give us 300. Paring knives to put in the bags, plus knife kits for all the winners. So the winners of the races get knife kits, and then but everybody that participates gets their name in a hat, and we just give away scholarships at the end of the race.
It's amazing. You guys show give up, away so much money.
Yeah, it's the industry. It's like show up and do your best, and good shit happens. You know, and that's what we prove them, because I mean they literally, you know, some of them walk away with $2,500 scholarships just
amazing.
Being there.
That's amazing. Yeah. Such good stuff, man. Panini, you're the man, dude. Seriously, I'm so honored to have you on here and chat with you. You're such a good person, man. I really appreciate your time, bro. Seriously.
I'm just a cook, man.
Maybe, but you're also
I'm
a pretty good dude.
That. Just, hey, I'm not smart. I'm just old. I've just been around. Experience goes a long way, man.
Yeah, but you're a good dude, man. You're doing good things for everybody out there, and much success to all the restaurants. And final note, man, seriously, what would be the piece of advice you'd give to all the young cooks out there today? Like, what would you tell somebody who's just about to go to culinary school? What would you say to them?
Man, you know, more than anything, you know, I think you got to be patient. You know, a race has to be run. You can't start the race at the end. You got to start at the beginning. And they have to realize a career is your life. Your life is a career. So you're not going to get rich and famous, probably never, but you can be very successful and very happy if you just get into what you're doing, have integrity, be honest. You know, I don't expect anybody I work with to be perfect, but be honest, you know, have my back and I'll have your back. Own up to your mistakes and just surround yourself with good people. Like they say, put yourself in a position to succeed and work your guts off, man. Show up, give an honest day's work, and just stay true to what you do, but be patient. You have to realize that you can't start at the finish line. You're not going to have your own Food Network show, you know, a week out of school and stuff like that. And, you know, as far as having catering companies and different things, you know, it all come with time, and you'll get your shot and look for opportunities. They're everywhere. There's always windows of opportunities. There's always doors of opportunities, and we often miss them. So be ready to kick them in and invest in yourself, whether it's reading books, stodging in a restaurant, listening to podcasts, working around good people for less money. Because down the road, there'll be value there. We all have to pay our bills, but, you know, listen to old people because they're experienced and smart. But
yes, that's
true. To get where you want to go, envision yourself there in 20 years and go, okay, if I want to be there, where do I need to be in 19, 18, 15, 10, 12, 9? Where do I need to be today? And start on that path and make some plans, plan some stuff out. You know, game plans can always change, but you will always be better off with some sort of a plan than just getting through life. And enjoy the ride, baby. Enjoy the ride.
Panini Pete, I couldn't have said it better myself. Bro, you are the man. Thank you for your time this evening, brother. Seriously, we all appreciate it so much.
Step Plum. Such a pleasure to be on your show, brother.
My man. I'll talk to you on down the road. All right, bro?
I'll probably see you in October, partner.
Hey, I hope so, man. I hope so. We'll talk to you.
Later. Thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate you all for listening.
My man. There he goes, guys. The one, the only, Panini Pete. How awesome was that conversation, dude? That guy is the man. I talked to him, and all I want to do is just literally just have more. What are you laughing at? It's just, that's what I want. Just Panini Pete, he's the man. That's it. He makes me want to cook more. He makes me want to be a better cook. Give it up for the man, Panini Pete, that's for sure. Much love to him being on the show. He's the man. Make sure you follow him. And, of course, guys, here on this program, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Chef_Plum. And, of course, on Facebook at Chef Plum. And don't forget, you can rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We got to do that because of the whole mishap with the Apple Podcasts. So please get on there and do that. Next week, you're going to hear an amazing replay of the Brooklyn Live show. We're excited about that. As long as I can record it. If I can't record, I got to call an audible. But that's the plan. So, ladies and gentlemen, please remember, food is one of the most important things we have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. Make sure you follow our friend Panini Pete. He is the man. And remember, give it the time it deserves. I'll see you guys next week right here on Plum Love Foods Live. Peace!
If you just shut the fuck up for 30 seconds, you might learn something.